We have a really fascinating request from you all today.
Yeah, a highly requested one.
Exactly. You asked us to look into the future of deeply personal AI assistants. And to do that, we're doing a deep dive into this incredibly provocative new manifesto.
Right, the one by Vlad Silic.
Yeah, Vlad Silic, the founder of localghost.ai, and it's titled The Ghost Has to Be Useful on Day One.
Such a great title.
It is. So the mission for our deep dive today is to basically explore this radical premise he has. You know, why the traditional software setup form is just fundamentally broken, how passive behavioral data, so basically how you naturally act on your devices, is completely replacing it. And, well, what happens when an AI learns who you are without ever actually asking you a single question?
It's honestly a complete inversion of how we normally interact with machines. Because, I mean, for decades, we've explicitly told computers what to think about us.
Right, we type in our preferences.
Exactly. We type it in, we check boxes, we fill out profiles. But Vlad's manifesto proposes a world where computers just quietly observe us and draw their own conclusions.
Which is wild.
It is. And the catalyst for this entire philosophy, it actually started with a very relatable human disagreement over a meal.
Oh, right, the lunch in Italy.
Yeah, at a restaurant called Assaggi Sisi. He was having lunch with his co-founder, Christina, and he was laying out this grand vision for this new AI demon he was building.
Right.
He wanted it to be this incredibly personal ghost in the machine that perfectly anticipates what the user needs. And Christina just listened to him, and then she basically poured cold water all over the entire idea.
Because of Gemini, right.
Exactly. She pointed out that she's been using Google's Gemini for years, and Gemini already knows literally everything about her.
Yeah, her health, her sleep patterns, upcoming travel.
Her obscure interests, all of it. So she told him point blank that she is not going to sit through some multi-week ramp-up phase just because he built a fun new toy.
Right, she's highlighting the immense switching cost of personalized AI. Because if every new digital assistant requires, you know, weeks of awkward, clumsy interactions before it actually gets you.
People will just give up. Adoption will flatline. I mean, nobody has the patience to train a new AI from scratch.
No.
She actually told Vlad she would rather just spend 20 minutes on the very first day she installs the app, filling out a massive, exhaustive form. Just get all the friction over with at once.
So it fits her perfectly from the start.
Right. A cold start demon that wouldn't actually be useful until a month later was an absolute non-starter for her.
Okay, let's unpack this because Vlad's immediate reaction was to try and find a compromise.
Like a middle ground.
Yeah, he thought about building like a short, fun personality test, you know, something like the Big Five or the Myers-Briggs or maybe the Enneagram. The user takes 20 minutes on day one and boom, the ghost has a foundational seed to start from. But Christina shot that down immediately too. She argued it was just too pigeonholy.
And Vlad actually went home after that lunch, dug into the psychology research, and realized, wow, Christina's intuition was entirely correct.
Yeah.
A personality test is arguably the worst possible way to introduce yourself to an artificial intelligence.
Wait, I actually like personality tests. I mean, who doesn't love finding out their Enneagram type?
What's fascinating here is why it fails for AI. Because when someone takes a test like the Big Five, which literally reduces all of human complexity to just five axes, they're forcing the AI to file them into a highly specific, rigid category.
Oh, I see. I always thought of it as, you know, being put in a bucket, but reading this manifesto, it feels way more like putting on a digital straitjacket.
A straitjacket is a much better way to describe the mechanism at play here. Like, let's say you're filling out an onboarding form for a new productivity AI, right?
Okay.
And you check a box that says you're an introvert. For a human reading that, the word carries nuance. A human knows you might still thrive in small, focused gatherings, or maybe you turn it on for big presentation.
Right, but for a machine.
Exactly. For a machine, that label just becomes a hard-coded default filter.
So the AI simply processes the rule introvert equals no crowds. So it might permanently filter out suggestions for a massive industry networking event, even if I've been, you know, actively trying to grow my career and push my boundaries.
Spot on. And you get stuck with that wrong frame until you happen to notice, maybe months later, that the AI is hiding opportunities from you.
Man, that's incredibly frustrating.
And the problem scales drastically when we look at highly sensitive categories, like neurodivergence. A traditional setup form might ask a user to tick a box, indicating they have ADHD or autism or dyslexia.
And the moment you tick that box, the AI just deploys the standard ADHD protocol, whatever the engineers decided that looks like.
Right. But two people who tick the exact same box for ADHD can manifest the condition in vastly different ways.
Of course.
They might have completely opposite coping mechanisms, totally different sensory triggers, different peak focus hours.
So a demon that treats them as an identical category based on a single self-reported checkbox is completely flattening their individuality.
It destroys the very nuance a personal AI is supposed to preserve.
Yeah.
Vlad actually summarizes this beautifully in the manifesto. He writes, quote, "A long onboarding flow is a team admitting they don't know who they are building for."
Wow. And he backs that up by looking at the broader software industry, right? Like, he points out tools like Trello before they were acquired, and Linear, which is a massive $1.25 billion company today.
Yeah.
They both ship without these massive onboarding forms. You just drop into the interface and start working. Contrast that with Jira, which has been asking users what specific department they work in since like 2002.
Yeah, their setup wizard just keeps expanding.
It never ends. Relying on a form puts the burden of categorization entirely on the user.
And the user is often a terrible judge of their own behavior.
Yeah.
So if asking someone to categorize themselves creates a straitjacket, the alternative has to be completely passive. The system has to figure you out without ever showing you a form. And Vlad found the answer to that in the passive behavioral data you are already leaving behind on your devices.
The digital footprint.
Exactly.
Yeah. The manifesto dives into literally a decade of research to prove that self-reporting is basically obsolete.
Yeah. To understand the trajectory here, we have to look at the foundational science.
Hmm.
Local Ghost cites this landmark 2013 study by Kaczynski and his colleagues.
Oh, the Facebook one.
Right. They analyzed nearly 60,000 participants and demonstrated that just by looking at a user's Facebook likes, just the raw clicks, absolutely nothing else, they could predict sexual orientation, ethnicity, and political views with 80 to 95% accuracy.
That is just staggering. 80 to 95%.
And then there's the 2015 follow-up study by Yu-Yu, Kaczynski, and Stilwell. They built a computer model that judged personality based on those exact same Facebook likes, and they pitted the computer's accuracy against the participants' actual human friends and family.
Oh, wow. How did it do?
Well, with just 10 likes, the computer beat a work colleague.
10 likes?
10. With 150 likes, it outperformed a parent or sibling. And with 300 likes, the algorithm's assessment of a person's personality was actually more accurate than their own spouse.
Wait, really? More accurate than the person they are married to.
Yes. Now, those studies are legacy science at this point, but they establish the core proof of concept, right? Passive digital behavior contains a higher fidelity signal than human observation.
Right.
But what Local Ghost is proposing goes far beyond legacy social media clicks. They're leveraging this field called digital phenotyping.
Okay, let's break that down, because this is the real mechanism that replaces the setup form. Digital phenotyping is essentially the process of building a psychological or medical profile based purely on how someone physically interacts with their digital devices, right?
Exactly. It looks at the microbehaviors. The manifesto references some staggering recent studies to show just how advanced this has become. Like in 2023, there was a study published in Nature Medicine by Peroshan.
Mm-hmm.
They actually screened toddlers for autism by monitoring how they behaved while using a tablet.
Yeah, the study mentions they achieved an AUC of 0.90. And for anyone who hasn't taken a statistics class recently, an AUC score, or area under the curve, basically measures the accuracy of a test, where 1.0 is absolute perfection.
Right.
So hitting an AUC of 0.90 means the computer vision system had a 90% chance of correctly distinguishing between a neurotypical child and one with autism, purely based on observing their screen interactions.
It's incredible. And then another 2023 study by Lee detected ADHD and sleep problems in children using nothing but the circadian rhythm data pulled from their wearable devices.
Wow.
And then the technology takes another massive leap with a 2025 study by Casals. They predicted ADHD with roughly 80% sensitivity using smartphone sensor data alone.
This is where I want to pause, because the mechanics of how that 2025 study works are just wild. It's not looking at what websites you visit. It's looking at how you move your phone, how your face tracks the screen, and the literal way your fingers tap the glass.
Yeah, the AI is analyzing the erratic nature of the tap rhythms, the variations in pressure applied to the screen, hyperfocus scrolling speeds.
It's just wild.
Those physical micro movements are highly reliable behavioral signatures for cognitive states.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because if you think about it, instead of filling out a dating profile saying, "I love hiking," the AI is like a digital Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
It never asks you a single question. It just looks at the metaphorical mud on your boots. It sees the pedometer data your GPS history is showing you in the mountains every Saturday and the elevated heart rate data from your smartwatch. It looks at the irrefutable evidence and just knows you are a hiker. No questions asked.
And Local Ghost applies that exact philosophy to everything you do. It isn't going to ask you to take a cognitive test. It's going to monitor how you write.
Right.
It'll look at the burstiness of your typing. Like, do you type a paragraph rapidly, delete half of it, pause for 2 minutes, and then rapidly type again?
Or
is your cadence steady and methodical?
Yeah, or like it measures how long you let an email sit in your drafts folder before you finally work up the nerve to send it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
According to a 2020 study by Statchel, the absolute highest signal channel for predicting your personality is your communication and social behavior. Who you text, when you reach for them, the frequency of your interactions.
And Vlad's core argument is that none of this data requires you to lift a finger or, you know, change your habits.
Yeah.
This is all data generated from actions you've already taken for your own authentic reasons.
Yep.
It's sitting right now on devices you already own.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, because that massive footprint already exists, a local AI that can read that footprint has an immediate day one advantage over a cloud AI that is just meeting you for the first time.
Right. Which brings us to the defining architectural challenge of this entire project.
Oh, yeah.
The massive privacy nightmare. Because having a digital Sherlock Holmes inspecting every text I send, every photo I take, and every weird late night Wikipedia rabbit hole I go down, I mean, that sounds incredible for personalization.
Yeah.
But if big tech gets their hands on a model that knows my micro hesitations and my exact cognitive state better than my spouse does, that is terrifying.
It is. And Vlad is incredibly clear-eyed about this in the manifesto. He outright states that the massive cloud platforms will inevitably try to exploit this space.
Of course they will.
They'll want to run these same behavioral inferences against their global user bases. And this is exactly why Local Ghost had to design an architecture where the technology itself is the privacy commitment.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they aren't asking you to trust some complex legal document or a, you know, 80-page terms of service agreement. They're asking you to trust the physical hardware constraints.
So the tech stack here is very different from what most of us are used to. Instead of sending all this deeply personal behavioral data to some server farm in California, Local Ghost runs entirely on a NAS,
right,
which is a network-attached storage device. For anyone unfamiliar, it's basically a physical hard drive enclosure with its own processor that sits in your own house, plugged into your own router.
Exactly. And the Ghost itself isn't just one giant monolithic program sitting on that box. It's actually a fleet of smaller sub-programs called daemons.
Daemons, right.
So there's ghost.noted, which strictly handles your text. There's ghost.framed for processing your images.
Right.
Ghost.voiced handles the audio you generate. And sitting above all of those specific daemons is a master daemon called ghost.synth.
Ah, the synthesizer.
Right. This master daemon takes all those separate modalities and synthesizes them into a cohesive, constantly updating model of who you are.
Got it. So the way you actually interact with all of this is by installing a client app on your phone or your laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And when you open the app, even if you're sitting on a train using public Wi-Fi, the app opens a secure VPN tunnel directly back to that physical NAS sitting in your living room.
Yep.
It pushes the new behavioral data over that encrypted tunnel, the master daemon updates your profile, and the actual model of your personality is written to your local disk.
And the computing power, the inference, runs on a local GPU inside your own box. Nothing ever ships to a corporate server.
That's a huge distinction.
And their approach to permissions follows that exact same logic. There's no massive, confusing Local Ghost consent form where you just unknowingly sign away your life.
Right.
The app simply uses the standard native operating system permissions of whatever device you're on. iOS, Android, Mac OS, they each ask you for permission one at a time. Exactly when the Ghost needs it.
So if the app needs the microphone, Apple or Google prompts you, not Local Ghost.
Exactly. And if you decide you're done, you just revoke consent by uninstalling the app, and the connection is permanently severed. The architecture is the privacy commitment.
All right, I have to stop you there and play the skeptical consumer for a second.
Go for it.
Buying a physical box, plugging it into a router, setting up a local server, and managing VPN tunnels. I mean, that is a massive amount of friction.
It's not trivial.
No. Most people I know give up if an app makes them create a password with a special character. I see the appeal for power users, but for the average person, won't this entirely kill adoption?
This raises an important question, and the friction is absolutely undeniable. It's the hurdle every decentralized technology movement has to face. But Vlad's argument is that you're trading short-term convenience for long-term data sovereignty.
I understand the sovereignty argument in theory.
Yeah.
But practically speaking, if I just want a smart assistant that helps me write emails, I'm probably just going to download the cloud version and, you know, accept the surveillance.
And many people will. But the counterargument presented in the manifesto is the massive side benefit that comes with that friction.
What's the benefit?
Just by setting this up, you aren't just getting an AI assistant. You're getting a completely private, localized archive of your entire digital life.
Yeah.
Your photos, your notes, your health data, your music, it all gets indexed locally. It becomes fully searchable by you, totally outside the control of big tech. Historically, consumers are willing to navigate technical friction if the value proposition is high enough.
Okay, let's say I buy into the value proposition. I set up the NAS, I give the demons access to my years of digital mud. What is it actually going to feel like to use this thing on day one?
To explain the emotional reality of this experience, Vlad goes right back to that lunch in Italy at Assaggi Sisi. He focuses on the cheese board Christina ordered.
I loved this detail in the manifesto. So Christina orders a cheese board, but she doesn't actually pick the specific cheeses or meats. She ignores the massive menu where everything is spelled out, asks for the board, and just trusts the kitchen.
Yeah.
The kitchen brings out a great default selection. And Vlad notes that if they kept humming back to that exact restaurant, the kitchen would observe what they ate, learn their specific tastes, and start varying the board to perfectly match their preferences without ever asking them to fill out a menu.
And that is the exact shape Vlad wants for Local Ghost on day one.
Ah.
He doesn't want you picking from a menu, which is basically all a setup form really is.
Right.
He wants to serve you a really good default board the moment you install the software, based purely on its initial scan of your footprint. Then, with every subsequent interaction, with every new piece of behavioral trace you leave, the board gets more refined and more tailored to your unique taste.
But the manifesto is very honest about what this will actually mean for the user experience. Vlad admits that even if they only partially succeed at this, living with this AI is going to feel eerie.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's not learning about you from the polished version of yourself you present on a form. It's learning from your unvarnished digital footprint. It is going to be right about you in ways you haven't even noticed about yourself.
It acts as a profound mirror held up to your own subconscious behaviors.
So what does this all mean? It makes me think of those rare moments when a very close friend points out a nervous tic you have or a phrase you use constantly, and you had absolutely no idea you did it. It's this jarring mix of feeling deeply, intimately understood, but also feeling slightly exposed. Even if you know intellectually that the only thing judging you is a GPU sitting in your own closet, the sensation of being perfectly observed carries a heavy psychological weight.
From a product design perspective, though, that eerie feeling is the ultimate proof of success.
Really?
Yeah. If the software didn't feel a little bit creepy, it would mean the AI was just regurgitating the flattened, stereotypical version of you that a traditional setup form creates. The creepiness is literally the friction of the machine bypassing the straitjacket and finding the real, messy, weird human being underneath.
Wow. Okay, we have to talk about the cliffhanger Vlad leaves us with at the end of the manifesto.
Right, the bill.
Yeah, they're finishing their lunch, they're paying the bill at Assaggi Assisi, and Vlad says to Christina, the great thing is, going forward, the ghost can read everything you link it to. Text, emails, audio, all of it, so you won't have to manually input much.
And Christina immediately spots the massive collateral issue. She points out that he can't just record other people and call it private software. She says, fine, it's private for you, but what about everyone else?
Exactly. If your perfectly personalized, locally hosted AI relies on reading your emails, listening to the audio in your environment, and analyzing the photos on your camera roll to understand who you are,
what does your AI owe to the friends, family, coworkers, and total strangers who are inevitably caught in the crossfire of your digital footprint?
It's a huge dilemma.
Because your data does not exist in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
It's woven entirely out of your interactions with the world around you. If your local ghost is secretly digesting the words and images of everyone you interact with to feed its model of you, whose privacy is really being protected?
And that is the open question we want to leave you with today. Think about what your own digital footprint would offer. You know, the drafts you didn't send, the photos you tapped, the apps you linger on, the literal way you tap your screen. What does all that say about you right now?
And who else is caught in that net?
Exactly. Take a look at the mud on your own digital boots. You might be surprised by what you find. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.